Hello, and welcome to another edition of MotoGP OD, the podcast about MotoGP. Today is our Sachsenring German GP racer wrap-up. So before we get to that, though, we've got several other items to talk about. We're going to talk about Rossi's mysterious arm movements at Donington. We have a listener email that covers, you know, when I was there at Donington, so I'm going to read that. I thought it was real good. We have comments about another motorcycle website that I found. MotoGP.com has a price reduction on their premium services. We're going to talk about that real quick. We have our contest, the t-shirt contest. I know you've been waiting for it. Been talking to it a long time, so we've got that going on. Then we'll have the Sachsenring qualifying report and our Sachsenring race wrap-up. And after the race wrap-up, there's a small thing that I can't read before because it's kind of a spoiler for the race wrap-up, so we'll cover that. And without a whole lot more yakking on and on, why don't we just get on with the show? In my British GP wrap-up podcast, I mentioned the violin-playing arm motions that Rossi was making as he rode across the finish line. I was thinking that it might be something along the lines of him saying that he was a virtuoso or something like that, or maybe some kind of joke with you that, like you do when people whine about stupid stuff and you know, have the little violin playing "My Heart Bleeds for You" or whatever that song is. So I wasn't too sure, and I kind of mentioned it on that podcast. Then I got an email from alert MotoGPOD listener Chris Schofield, and Chris explained that what was going on. That he heard from Eurosport. Apparently, the violin playing motions relate to an Italian thing where basically he was indicating that now you're playing to my tune or something along those lines. Appreciate that. Thank you, Chris, for clearing that one up. Apparently, the Eurosport announcers mentioned that, but Nick Harris and Matthew Roberts failed to do so, or it got edited out here for our Speed TV broadcast here in the States. And because Chris watched MotoGP in England, he gets the Eurosport feed, which we unfortunately do not get here in the United States. But I'm happy to get what we get from Speed, so I won't complain too much. Maybe if they could just skip one repeat of a NASCAR race or some of the crap shows that they're doing, like Texas Hardtails and stuff like that, then maybe they could just squeeze in an extra half hour or so to give us a little bit more coverage of MotoGP. That would be really perfect, but, you know, I'll take what I get. Speaking of MotoGP coverage, I saw a post on the Speed TV forum a while ago about the Nielsen ratings for Speed's coverage of the Laguna Seca race. And I meant to comment on this earlier, but it kind of got missed. So I'm going to comment on this real quick. Apparently, the USGP was the 8th most watched show on Speed TV that day. And the NASCAR truck race pulled in nearly 3 times as many viewers than the USGP did on Speed. That's ouch. That's not good. The USGP got a 0.29 rating, equivalent to 186,000 households. But the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race got a 0.74, or 477,000 households. And it's like, that just kills me. That I can't believe it. But I guess there's no accounting for taste, so I don't know. However, a later poster in that same thread did say, and I'm not sure where he got this information or if it's even true or any of that, but he said that the MotoGP race was the highest rated program that day in the critical 18 to 49-year-old demographic. And now, if that's true, that's really good news, because that's the number that smart advertisers base their advertising buys on. They don't use this the raw households. You know, they want those demographics, that group that's actually going to spend money. And it also might explain why, when during the NASCAR truck race, you might see commercials for Viagra, or those scooter wheelchairs that you can get for free from Medicare. But during the motorcycle races, you're going to get commercials for sporty bikes and insurance and stuff like that. But actually, I have no idea what commercials they play on the NASCAR truck races because I've never watched it, so I might be wrong. I don't know. Whatever. I got an email from Ian Shaw in the UK. He was at the British GP at Donington, and he sent me a really great write-up about his day at the race. I really enjoyed it, so I'm going to just pretty much read this verbatim from him and, you know, probably insert a comment or two on the way. Ian had this to say. It's great to find that there is a podcast for MotoGP. It was the first thing I searched for once upgrading to iTunes 4.9. I was listening to your Donington roundup, and I thought I should add some more insight into the race, as I was trackside. Firstly, the weather. The Sunday started overcast, and the first race of the day, which was the BMW Boxer Cup, by the way, at 10 a.m., started out dry. Midway through the race, the clouds closed in, and shortly before the end, it started to rain lightly. The discussion, while the 125 bikes were on the grid, was tire choices, as the rain had stopped after the BMW race. The general grid feeling was for intermediate tires, though a few moments before the race, the rain was getting heavier and most opted for wets. No sooner had the race started than the rain started, and gradually it got heavier and heavier. I was stationed at McLean's corner for the 125 race, and the negative camber corner at the top of a small hill caught out many of those light bikes. The rain kept coming and getting worse and worse. Unfortunately, I missed most of the 250 race as we were forced to find somewhere dry, read less wet, to stand. For MotoGP, I stationed myself at the Fogarty S's, which on TV had the most waterlogged camera, and I can assure you that it was simply that wet, and it wasn't particularly windy or anything. And Ian had some additions to the MotoGP OD summary of the race, and he continues, "When John Hopkins was leading, following Melandri and Gibernau's falling out of the race, he went over the grass at the Crane Kurz, not so much crashing as tentatively sort of slithering across the infield and rejoining well down the order. And by the way, word is that Hopper's visor messed it up so badly that he couldn't see the corner, and that's what caused that slither. When he dropped the bike, there was some damage to it, but he returned to the pits for some repairs and then re-entered the race after that, which I thought was a very studly sort of action." Ian continues, "There was also the point with Rossi in second, where he outbraked himself at the Foggy S's, coming to a complete standstill and dropping 3 or 4 seconds behind Edwards, who was in third. He must have had some blistering laps, as within three he was back in front of Edwards with the leading group, and once he got into the lead, he was pulling out an incredible 2 seconds a lap over everyone else until he settled into a rhythm with a comfortable 6 to 7 second cushion." One last thing that Ian added to that email. He says, "Could you also give a mention to all those who braved the weather at Donington last week, especially those, like myself and my father, who rode motorcycles there? It was cold, wet, and miserable, but I wouldn't change it for anything, as the racing was superb." And I'll admit, Ian, on that one, I'm jealous. I would have loved to have been there. I mean, cold or not, you know, it's nicer when they're in the sun, but yeah, that's why God made Gore-Tex. And then also Ian went on to say, This is unbelievable. He says, "Please also mention that it is not big nor clever to arrive at Donington in a car and then put motorcycle leathers on to make it look like you arrived by bike." That is unbelievable. That's the height of poseriness. I mean, I can see putting the motorcycle on a trailer or bringing it on a truck or something like that and ride your motorcycle the last few miles or just use it there at the track or something. Okay, I can deal with that. You know, you're hauling all kinds of camping gear or you got your family or whatever, but come on. That's just losery to put on a set of leathers and walk around even though you just got out of your Ford or whatever. God. So, I thought that was a fantastic email. Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it a lot. Thanks for sending it in. First-hand stuff like that from people that are actually there at the races is always really good to get, and I appreciate stuff like that. So, thanks a lot, Ian. I wanted to mention a motorcycle website that I ran across a while ago. Jim Race from RideOn2.com sent me an email telling me about RideOn2. And at first glance, you kind of think it's another discussion forum, you know, with a motorcycle, MotoGP tipping contest sort of a thing. But when you kind of delve a little deeper into it, it's kind of a magazine in blog format almost with regular contributing editors. And these are great write-ups that these people are doing here. So it's really well worth a look. Michelle Dove had a recent entry for why Robert should get the sack for his fantastic performance, talking about Robert's podium at Donington, and I actually thought it was really good, some very interesting viewpoints. So I encourage you to check that one out, RideOn2, and it's 2 spelled out, so RideOn2.com. The MotoGP.com website recently announced that they're reducing the prices on their premium content services because it's halfway through the season, so they're not going to charge you for an entire season. Now their premium half season top of the line package is 20 euros, which is probably about, I don't know, $23 or $24 or something like that. And you know, it gets you all the races, lots of videos, lots of photographs, lots of interviews. It's a really cool thing. I get a lot of information out of MotoGP.com, so it's well worth checking out. And now it's even cheaper. Okay, it's time for the MotoGP OD contest. Yay! Yay, cheers. And, okay, here's how this is going to work. I've got 3 audio clips that I recorded at Laguna Seca during the practice sessions. I'll play each of those a couple times through, and you all get to guess which motorcycles they are. The first correct guess wins a handsome MotoGP OD t-shirt, most likely in size extra large, but maybe not. If you email me in time with your size, I'll see what I can do about getting a different size. And this is a cool prize, a brand new, in-the-box, still sealed copy of the special preview edition of the Faster DVD. And this is the one with a single disc that came out in early 2004. It's still very cool. It says special preview collector's edition or some special preview edition on the top. It's sure to be a valuable collector's item. If you haven't seen Faster, you really need to see the movie. And if you have seen it, you'll want to watch it again. And if you already own a copy, you can give this one to a friend or at the office Christmas party or whatever. The DVD is NTSC Region 1, so some of our international listeners might have some difficulties with it. Sorry, that can't be helped. You could always just turn around and sell it on eBay. So, you'll send your guesses in an email to motogpod@motogpod.com. motogpod@motogpod.com. And please put contest in the subject, something like that. If nobody gets it exactly correct, the closest answer will win. And yes, I'll send the shirt to our international listeners, and you can enter more than once, up to 3 times. Don't forget to use the word contest, please, in your email subject. And the winner will be announced on the Friday, August 12th podcast. So we have a couple weeks here to make your guesses and things, and for new listeners to catch up and so forth. And because this is going to be kind of difficult, a couple of hints. So none of these motorcycles is a Honda. There is a red one, and there is a real underdog in the group. Maybe that's the red one, maybe not. Enough hints. I think that it's time for you guys to check it out. Okay, here's number one. Okay, number one one more time. Okay, here's number two. Alright, number two one more time. Here is number three. Okay, and number three one more time. And here's all three of them, one right after the other. Okay, good luck. Thank you very much for playing. I look forward to getting the answers. Let's talk a little bit about the qualifying session on Saturday there at the Sachsen Ring. Nicky Hayden celebrated his 24th birthday at the Sachsen Ring circuit on Saturday by taking the pole for the German GP. Hayden clocked a time of 122.785, beating Sete Gibernau's time of 122.889 by a tenth of a second. Alex Barros set the third quickest lap at 122.932 to complete an all-Honda front row. But Alex couldn't quite challenge for the pole in the closing minutes of qualifying because he hucked his shiny new RC211V into the kitty litter for the third time of the weekend after crashing twice in free practice on Friday. You might be pushing a little too hard there, Alex. Championship leader Valentino Rossi clinched a fourth position start with a 122.973. Vale had a difficult Friday, only running 13th fastest and crashing his Yamaha for only the second time all season. Rossi later commented that he'd had troubles dialing in the setup there at Sachsen Ring, but he managed to get everything sorted out more or less. Like I've said, Rossi hates this circuit. Marco Melandri, currently second in the rider standings, posted a quick final qualifying lap of 123.051 to grab fifth on the grid. Max Biaggi clocked a lap only 3/1000ths of a second slower at 123.054 to complete an all-Italian second row, and making it 5 Hondas out of 6 on the front 2 rows. Colin Edwards suffered from similar setup problems to his teammate Rossi, but also made progress in Saturday's qualifying session as he ran a 123.139 to qualify 7th fastest on his Yamaha. Loris Caparossi did a very respectable 123.174 on his Ducati, and Kenny Roberts coked his Suzuki to a 123.212 to complete row 3. John Hopkins qualified in great pain after breaking a metatarsal bone in his foot during Friday's second free practice session, and he qualified 10th fastest at 123.296. This is the first race this season that the highly enthusiastic Hopper has been outqualified by his older, wiser, and heavier Suzuki teammate Kenny Roberts Jr., so that's kind of interesting. About 2/3 of the way through the qualifying session, Carlos Checa had a whopper of a vicious high side that threw him completely over the bars of his Ducati like a circus trapeze artist, but he managed to come right back out a few minutes later on the backup duck and qualified a commendable 11th with a time of 123.341. Finishing up row 4 was Shinya Nakano, the fastest of the three Kawasaki riders this weekend, with a lap of 123.382. Behind Nakano, the other two Kawasaki riders, home favorite Alex Hoffman and wildcard rider Olivier Jacques, took 13th and 14th spot on the grid with times of 123.405 for Hoffman and 123.715 for Jacques. Then came Makoto Tomita, the usual underdog of the Honda camp, with a 123.860, a full second off Hayden's pace on basically the same motorcycle. Tomata's got the same trap speed as the other Hondas, around 285 kilometers an hour, or about 177 miles per hour, but he's definitely losing time in the corners. Talking about losing time somewhere, Bayless on the second Camel Honda qualified a miserable 16th with a time of 123.916. Using a qualifying tire, he could only shave a tenth off of his lap time over a race tire. Bayless was not having a good weekend at all. Interestingly, when I checked out the official TroyBayless.com website, I noticed that in his circuit information for each race, he lists the electrical info for that particular country, which I thought was a little odd. I would have expected that from Santi Gibernau so that he would know which hairdryer to bring, but I'm not 100% sure why it's on Bayless's site. I don't know, maybe I'll do a little bit more research into that, see if there's some kind of electrical thing that Troy's got going on. Fortuna's second-string Yamaha teammates Tony Elias and Ruben Chaus were 17th and 18th on the grid, with a 124.421 and a 124.605. Row 7, we have James Ellison in 19th with a 124.988 on the woefully underpowered, not quite yet a Blatta WCM. Robbie Rolfo on last year's Ducati with a 125.011 in 20th spot. Shane Byrne in 21st position on the Team Roberts KTM Proton KR did a 125.713. And rounding out the grid in spot 22 was Franco Battaini on the other Blatta WCM machine, with a time of 126.154, a full second slower than his teammate Ellison. And did you notice that the top 14 grid positions were all within 1 second of Hayden's qualifying time, which is really close, not bad at all. Very good qualifying session there. Okay, now it's time to do the race coverage for the German GP at Sachsenring. So I want to give everybody the usual bit of time that, you know, if you haven't watched the race yet, it's time to turn off the podcast because I'm going to spoil the results for you here. So, like I said, if you haven't watched the race yet, turn off the podcast. And I also wanted to say thanks again to Ian Shaw, because he gave me some invaluable assistance on writing this up, sent me some comments about things that he noticed in the Eurosport coverage and of the race today. So I managed to sort of mix that in with my stuff here, Ian, and I think we came up with a pretty good race report, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much. So, here we go. The German GP took place today on a nice warm day. It was 23 degrees centigrade, which is about 73 degrees Fahrenheit. There were 95,364 fans in attendance, which is a couple thousand more than last year. When the lights went out to start the race, Nicky Hayden got a good start from pole for that hole shot going into turn one, and Barros got a great start from the right side of the grid. They were followed closely behind by Rossi, who managed to get past Sete in second position there on the grid, and momentarily past Barros into second spot before going a little bit wide into turn one and allowing Barros to close that door again. Gibernau and Melandri traded a little paint, kind of jostling for position into that turn one, and that compounded Sete's not-so-great of a start and put him into fifth place at turn one, right behind Caparossi. Edwards took advantage of that Melandri-Gibernau scuffle and was in sixth, with Melandri in seventh. Shane Byrne on the Proton and Kawasaki riders Alex Hoffman and Olivier Jacques all went down in turn one on that first lap, ending their day about 250 meters into the race. Dull! Big bummer for German Alex Hoffman in front of his home crowd, and the Kawasaki racing team is based in Germany, so it's almost like Kawasaki's second home race as well. After that turn one cluster, Hayden started right away to open up a good-sized gap over Barros. Rossi saw this and didn't waste any time putting in a picture-perfect pass on Barros at that Sachsen left-hander, which is the second-to-last corner before the start-finish line, roughly at the end of the first lap. So for the next few laps, Hayden was leading nicely, followed by Rossi and Barros, with Gibernau passing Caparossi for fourth. Ellison retired on the WCM on lap two, probably for a mechanical, and Bayless hoyed his Honda into the gravel trap on a fast low side at the left-hander on after the Omega turn. Then on lap five, Hopkins had a nasty high side at the top of a downhill section of the track, catapulting him onto his back and straight along the middle of the track, where he lay winded on the tarmac, and the race was red flagged, which caused all the riders to go to the pits. We have to have a restart. MotoGP doesn't do any of that aggregate crap, so thank God. So the half-second-odd lead that Hayden had built up was gone. They lined up for the restart, Hayden again on the pole with Rossi in position two, followed by Barros and Gibernau. Hayden got a good restart, leading into turn one again. Edwards made a terrible start, dropping back to like ninth. The Ducatis also lost out. However, Max Biaggi made it to the back of that leading pack in fifth position. After that restart, Valle and Sete were right up there with Hayden, not letting him get away like they had on that first start a little bit. And at turn one on the second lap, Rossi dived past Hayden. It did take Rossi a couple of tries to pass Hayden, however, so Nicky shouldn't feel too bad about it. Later in that same lap, Gibernau passed Hayden for second, so we had Rossi, Gibernau, Hayden, Barros, and Biaggi first through fifth. Then on lap three, Gibernau pulled a beautiful pass on Rossi at that same Sachsen curve where earlier Rossi had passed Barros. And you kind of think Rossi would be a little more careful, but he left the door open, and Gibernau just a picture-perfect pass. So the leading five riders were all in a row right now by this time, with Gibernau, Rossi, and Hayden all real close and bunched up in a group of three, and then a small gap to Barros and Biaggi. And amazingly, Nakano on the Kawasaki was in sixth, dicing with Biaggi for a while for fifth, with a long, comfy gap back to seventh position for Melandri. And this is pretty much how it stayed until the final laps, with Rossi hunting Gibernau in his classic sort of Rossi fashion, and Hayden just not far behind, but not able to quite get up there and make that pass. Then on the final lap, Rossi was looking to go inside Gibernau into the first corner, when Sete outbraked himself for, I don't know, maybe got caught dreaming about his supermodel girlfriend or something, and he ran really wide, leaving Rossi just this huge open door, but he managed to slam it shut in front of Hayden, so now we're at Rossi, Gibernau, Hayden for second, third. And poor old Sete, I mean, he really could have had that race, had it all, and that one mistake cost him big time. With just over three quarters of a lap remaining, Hayden was trying hard to pass Gibernau while Rossi was opening up that gap. And Hayden really pushed in the last sector, but he couldn't quite do it. So the final results were Valentino Rossi, Sete Gibernau in second position, Nicky Hayden third, Max Biaggi fourth, Alex Barros 5th, Shinya Nakano 6th, a very respectable ride for the Kawasaki there, Marco Melandri 7th, Colin Edwards 8th, Loris Caporossi 9th, Makoto Tomata 10th, Kenny Roberts 11th, Tony Elias 12th, Ruben Chaus 13th, Robbie Roffel 14th, and Franco Battaini 15th. And we had quite a few DNFs. Carlos Checa crashed out. And not even starting the second part, we had Troy Bayliss, Olivier Jacques, John Hopkins, Alex Hoffman, Shane Byrne, and James Ellison. So, all in all, it was a really good race, well worth watching. And the post-race interviews were kind of entertaining. You know, Gibernau said that going wide was maybe his birthday present to Nicky, but instead it went to Rossi and that sort of thing. There was some discussion about the tires that they were using during the race, which is always good to hear that kind of stuff, that they were using the dual compound type of tires. And interestingly, Hayden and Rossi both used a rear tire with a medium soft right side and a medium hard left side. But Gibernau and Barros, oddly enough, used the exact opposite, a medium hard right side and a medium soft on the left side. Now, at Sachsenring, it's primarily, predominantly left-turning track. And they've got that turn after the Omega, which is just this enormous, long, huge left-hander, and you put a lot of wear on that left side of the tire, so it's so strange that they would go with the soft on the left, but I guess they're figuring that they're going to get the additional grip rather than worried about wear. I thought that was real interesting. So that doesn't really shake up the championship much. It extends Rossi's lead quite a bit. He's got a huge gap over Marco Melandri. Marco Melandri is still in second position. 236 points for Rossi, 116 points for Melandri, so 120-point gap from first to second. Now, oddly enough, from second through fifth positions, which you got Melandri, Gibernau, Edwards, and Biaggi, are all covered by 4 points. Melandri's got 116, Gibernau 115, Edwards 114, Biaggi 113. And then Barros and Hayden are tied on 101 for fifth and sixth behind that. So, really, for second place in the championship, it's anybody's game. First place is pretty much a done deal. I mean, it's mathematically possible, yes, but pretty doubtful. So it will be a good championship for second position, and it's going to be fun. Like I say, we have 4 weeks until Brno, so that's going to be a long wait, but after that, things will shake up for the 7 remaining races this season. One last little thing here to talk about that Kawasaki debacle at turn 1 on lap 1 there. Jacques and Hoffman had sort of different versions of the crash and exactly what happened, and they sort of had a he said thing going on between them, each more or less blaming the other for the crash. And poor old Kawasaki Yuckel Racing, two of their three riders take each other out on the first corner of the first lap of the team's home GP. So, in any event, Jacques said, I'm sorry for Alex. I know how bad he must feel about this incident at his home race. In turn one, Shaky Byrne came from behind very hard on the brakes and crashed in front of Alex, who had just had to wait a moment to flick into the corner. I was behind and on the inside a little and able to turn into the corner, and then Alex had some room and turned in and we just touched. It was an unfortunate incident. It's very disappointing for me. I need to race and do laps and get more experience on the Kawasaki. So you kind of put your own spin on that one, but it sort of sounds like Jacques saying, you know, I'm very sorry that Alex screwed everything up. Okay, Hoffman says, and he says, it's very frustrating to be out of a 30-lap race after just 250 meters, especially my home Grand Prix, and it is not a good situation for the Kawasaki team. I made a good start, and going into turn one, Shaky Byrne was way too late on the brakes, and I knew he would crash, so I opened some room for him. Then I flicked into the corner, it was open and clear, and then my rear end was gone when OJ hit me. I haven't got eyes in the back of my head. Shaky being late on the brakes is not the reason we crashed. I had a chance today to show what I could do. It's very disappointing. So Hoffman is definitely all out blaming Jacques. The camera angle wasn't close enough to be able to see exactly what happened, other than that the two bikes, you know, did come together and crash, but it's a little difficult to tell exactly why. Hoffman did kind of move around to avoid Shaky Burn, and, you know, was it Jacques' fault? Was it Hoffman's fault? Was it just racing? I don't know. But it's certainly a bummer when the two teammates dig each other out like that. So it was fun times in the Kawasaki garage that afternoon. And maybe they'll have to watch the race videos to see if they can see a slightly better angle on it and figure out who's right. And speaking of Kawasaki, in the special videos section of the MotoGP.com website, there's a video called A Look at the Kawasaki Hospitality. And it's one of these typical weird little videos that they put on the website all the time, where it's just kind of B-roll stuff that didn't make it into the broadcast, or they do for background, or who knows what. And so they show you the Kawasaki Hospitality tent, and there's this big door. It's actually not even a tent. It's more of a trailery building thing. And there's a door with marked team, and on the other side there's a door marked guest. And they go in on the team side, and there's a few people eating, and they sort of show one of the caterers doing her thing and putting out food and this and that and the other. And, you know, people having a good time talking and so forth. And then they show you the guest door and kind of go through it. And there is not one soul inside there. It's just dead empty. And I'm not 100% sure what Dorner was trying to sort of put across with that. If there was some sort of weird hidden message of, you know, this is the team Kawasaki Hospitality and it's dead empty. I'm sure it's not like that. It must have caught them, you know, it was on like Wednesday or something like that when there's just no guests to be had, or I don't know. But I thought it was kind of interesting. So look for that one. It's called A Look at the Kawasaki Hospitality. Okay, that about does it for today. Now we're going into that excruciatingly long 4-week mid-season break. So the next race is the Czech GP at Brno on August 28th. It's 4 weeks away. So we won't have any of the Monday race wrap-up episodes, but we'll have the Friday episodes. I'll find something to talk about between now and then. But this coming Friday, I'm going to have some more emails from listeners that I got with some questions about MotoGP bikes, classes, rules, so forth. Maybe a little basic for some people that may bring other people up to speed. I don't know. Send me your comments and stuff on what you think about it. I don't want this to turn into a overly technical something that casual fans are just going to say, well, that guy's, you know, way over my head and I don't like it. But on the other hand, I don't want it to be too basic and then lose the people that are more than just casual fans. So I want to strike a balance. Also, I'll put a bunch of other stuff, whatever I can find. And one last thing, do me a big favor. Tell your friends about MotoGP OD. The subscription numbers have leveled off kind of lately. They're still good, but I was getting used to seeing them climbing and climbing and over, and they've just sort of leveled off. So after moving the site to the new servers and the podcast directory and all that, I've got bandwidth to burn, so I want to get rid of it. I need to get lots of listeners downloading lots of different episodes. And I know that I don't feel very good about going to an internet forum that I've never posted in much before and just all of a sudden plugging my own podcast. But, you know, if you like what you hear on MotoGP OD, maybe put a post in your favorite board or tell your friends or tell the guys in the writing club. I don't know. Whatever, in any event, I'd appreciate that a lot. And thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. We will talk to you next time. And this is MotoGP OD. We are out.